Paloma with PiratePods.com, and I'm on the phone with Kino, who's in Manhattan, and I'm going to ask him to introduce himself.
Hi there, this is Kino speaking from the sixth floor of a building in Manhattan. It's actually the place where I made the album Map of the Universe. In the realm of death, the dumb statue long at the distant sun.
My first question, and I ask this for every telephone interview because I think it helps set the scene. What are you wearing?
What am I wearing?
Yes.
I'm wearing a jumper that was typically worn by, do you know the band Sensational Alex Harvey?
No.
It's
Tell
a fantastic band from, they're all Scotsmen, and it is in the 70s. It was a wild band, and he always wore this stripy jumper. I'm wearing the exact one, actually. That's black and white.
And so tell me about the environment. What's around you right now?
I'm actually at a studio, so it's a sound recording facility where I made my record. And I often come here and work because it still serves as my headquarters and how I promote the record after it's finished. And there's all these gadgetry that my producer, Jeff, he's an inventor. He builds his own analog equipment. And there's all sorts of weird, wiry stuff. All these boxes and, you know, microphones and instruments lying about. I wouldn't like you to be here because it's quite untidy.
All right, so tell me a story about yourself. It can be real or it can be made up.
I'm not really interested in stories. How about this? I'm constructing a story in public eye at the moment. That's what I'm doing. And that's probably the most interesting thing to talk about.
Tell me the story.
There's no story.
There's no story.
Well, I'm not a person... Well, the story about Kino is probably a... deflecting all possible stories to be attached to a man who's doing something creative. So, let's think in terms of cinema. The story is replaced by almost like a documentary take on someone doing something important. And there you go, I sabotaged the whole thing.
Very good. So tell me about Map of the Universe.
Right, I thought I'd never come to that.
I was getting there, I was just trying to warm you up a little bit, so you could get started.
No, the Map of the Universe is a concept album. It's something I did with the help of this guy who I work with, Jeff Blankensop, who is known for his ties to Pink Floyd. And his world is all analog, high quality, high fidelity sound. And our collaboration basically started in 2005 when I walked into his studio and said, "This is my demos, I want to make this album." And at the time, he was finishing off the first record of a band called Secret Machines. Mm-hmm. And they were finishing off that record that they did. And I think it's called, I don't know what it's called, the first record. And after that point, we started working, and it was a full development with him. And he still works with me on the record and in the aftermath of its completion. So basically, Map of the Universe is a concept album, and it has 11 songs. Mm-hmm. And they work as sequences in what would be a feature film. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is actually based on the concept of what a map, what the map of the universe is. Uh-huh. So it's a try. How do you say that? It's not a trilogy, but it's a it consists of three mediums, and mm-hmm. and every in every medium the text itself is sort of different, you know. Because I just finished the album.
Mm-hmm.
So in that context, it's 11 songs that deal with, you know, essential human elements,
mm-hmm.
the psyche, psychology, history, and you know, all aspects of human existence, and deals with that. And in the filmic version, it's almost again the analysis of the same situation, but not directly having anything to do with the songs, but just based on this, on the sequences that inform the songs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the whole thing is really just about theorizing how life functions in human intelligence,
uh-huh.
and you know, between human beings and doings, what it is that creates confusion and chaos, and that is the very essence of our, you know, doubt in life. So it's just like a, you know, a melting pot of how can I say, it's just a load of information to distill into communicable form, and
mm-hmm.
you know, with the music it's really universal in a way, because
mm-hmm.
nobody has to know anything about the depths of the universe,
no.
and how things, you know, how reality is analyzed and constructed,
right?
But in the immediacy of songs, they just hopefully, you know, the spirit does leave some sort of imprint of that essential, you know, reality that has to resonate in human awareness.
Mm-hmm. So when you get to the heart of the elements, I mean, you have the three elements, you have sound and image and word. Do you find that at the heart of them, they're all really the same thing?
Yeah, it really is, actually. I'd say, I mean, what I like the idea of myself being a poet of sound and image rather than musician.
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly because I believe that sound and image are the two independent creative elements that's available to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually non-human, you know, it's something that does not depend on us.
No.
So we make use of it with cameras and you know, recordings,
mm-hmm.
on, you know. But it is the probably most unspoiled version of the reality as it you know, it can be universal, and when actually the language is then what I refer to as word,
mm-hmm.
is the reflection of that universal reality through the prism of human mm-hmm. psyche and psyche, you know, through the human mind, and it's just whenever I start talking about it, all that, the image I see in my mind is the prism of the dark side of the moon, when you get the, you know,
mm-hmm.
the spectrum of light reflected in that prism, and then, you know, the rays of the rainbow.
Right.
It's that's how I perceive this thing, that whatever you're dealing with, a scene, you know, it's an inspiration or the reality or an idea, it just enters through the human prism and comes out as language, and that's,
right.
you know, it's just versions of the same thing that we all look at every day, and
mm-hmm.
that's something very powerful. But it also it divides and creates differences,
mm-hmm.
and that's based on the you know, on the differences in language. So to me, that sound and image, when it's used properly, it's almost like a super language that sort of supersedes that fractured version of the same thing coming through us.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, it's my experience with expression. It's I'd like to see it as honest as it can be to the universe,
mm-hmm.
before it's humanized, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what any text that anyone, I mean, you could be making a documentary on cooks, right? So as far as I'm concerned, and if they do the right justice to those elements, then it is the outcome would be in a superior language to the, you know, subjective language. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. So tell me about your character Nine.
Oh yeah, I mean Nine is the character that I devised. Mainly, it goes back to my childhood when I first started to realize that there was some sort of emotional bond between me and that the symbol of number nine.
Uh-huh.
I was young, you know, almost as young as like when you start recognizing your image in the mirror.
Uh-huh.
So whenever I see number nine, I identify it as like some sort of relevance to, you know, to me as an identity. You know, it was something that belonged to me rather than it's just a number or any other thing that's floating about that I, you know, come across. It's so then the significance of that grew with me over the years, it sort of works as in an alter ego way, because I'm able to project on all the things that have to be done and represented and sort of, you know, propagated by this really determined character.
Uh-huh.
It's just loaded on number nine. So most people, if they're dealing with music, sorry, the phone is going off. Most people, you know, create themselves a persona on stage as a musician.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then they probably have their, you know, if you think about David Bowie,
uh-huh,
he had Ziggy Stardust and many others, you know, personas to bounce whatever he was interested in, you know, narrating.
Uh-huh.
But in my case, it's almost like Kino, the stage persona, is the pure construct that speaks to the audience who's uh-huh expecting certain things, and it is actually the manipulation of number nine, who's the solid, you know, determined visionary.
Uh-huh.
How he manipulates the audience through Kino. So it's the complete reverse. I mean, the spectacle is actually reversed in my case.
Uh-huh.
Also, number nine actually also serves for my iconography, as I'd like to call it, in images, in film and in video work that I've done. It's a character that is... that the narrative is based on. So basically, it is probably the simplest way I can put it is the map of the universe is discovered by the character number nine, who basically is a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And what he discovers is a map of the universe, which I'm not going to talk about that. But the map of the universe, because the album does that. And but I'll say that it's the ancient map of the universe that this character discovers, that it's essentially something that's always been present on Earth, you know, in front of our eyes throughout the history, in the great achievements of old minds who left their mark.
All right, so if the map of the universe had a scent, what would it smell like?
If that had a scent, it's... probably smell like cactus, which doesn't have a smell. It smells like water.
Like water.
It tastes like water and smells like water.
Very good. Is the universe so small that it can be mapped?
Say again?
Is the universe so small that it can be mapped?
I think it's infinite. It's endless and boundless. That's why it can.
So if you woke up tomorrow and discover that something about you had changed, what would you want it to be?
If I'd like anything to be changed?
Yes.
I'd probably remove language.
And why? Why would you want that to be changed?
Because then it'd be obvious to see, because then our senses wouldn't be exhausted by the overload of subjective, you know, projections.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we were not speaking, then we were going to just point to things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you point to things, it is actually much more democratic than constructing, you know, the manipulation of language and build ideas, because everything you say stands for an ideology.
Yes.
It's the extension of an ideology. So if I mean, that's how I think anyway. In my mind, I interpret the world through images.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to what we're saying, you know, about if the image, sound, and word.
Yes.
Are all the same thing, essentially.
Right. So do you experience synesthesia?
Yes, definitely. I'm a synesthete. That's the one. Synesthete.
Yes.
That's how I operate. I mean, it's something I've been aware for longest time, and that informs all my work. Because, I mean, I started writing poetry, or, you know, dealt with language.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, that was the first step into what I do. Because I wasn't, you know, a born musician or a mm-hmm. filmmaker at the age really young, you know, like around 9 years. I was already making songs and verses and writing.
Mm-hmm.
So then my interest was very much about dismantling the logic that, you know, governs language
mm-hmm.
by just playing around with words and sentences.
Yes.
So that its artificiality just is obvious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a way, much more philosophical level. It's that's what surrealist and Dada. Well, actually, surrealism does that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just complete ridicule. I mean, the more you ridicule things, the pompousness and seriousness and constructed ideology in one thing, it just appears so rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a liberating, you know, it's
yes.
such a liberating factor in understanding how everything is actually constructed. And
yes.
There's everything is taken granted. And the minute you realize that, then the whole world order just dissipating from your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the very, very liberating stance to have, because it's once then you break down all the barriers and
uh-huh.
you've got the whole universe instead of just a room to deal
yes.
with. Then you could be mapping the universe from that point of departure
mm-hmm.
to know that in fact everything is related in the, you know, everything relates
right.
back to us to the original,
well.
The same thing.
And if it's infinite, then that point, no matter where you are, is always at the center.
Exactly. I mean, also the beautiful thing is everybody's equal, right? So
right.
if you were to say there are numbers, let's think about it in terms of mathematics. And you say there's infinite number of amount of numbers through, you know, between 1 and 2, there's infinite amount of numbers, right?
Uh-huh.
If then you go to point 1, point 2, 1,
uh-huh.
point 1, and each of those, when you centralize any of those points as one, you know, as the starting point, it just goes to be equal. So
mm-hmm.
then you are basically equating, you know, and breaking away all differences between things that you attribute to
mm-hmm.
in order to count them.
Yes.
Quantify them, you know, to qualify them.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that dissipates, and it's then thereafter you, when you think about the universe as such a vast place, it just becomes very tangible, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
even put it this way, I'm in a room in Manhattan, and I'm looking at certain objects around me, and there's a third person hearing our conversation, and they're in their own room in their city in their house. And after this conversation ends, we all go back to our own parts. But the fact of the matter, if the phone was on, connected to one of us, then that universe is most expanded. And when others expire, that still carries on, and it seems to be a window into some sort of vision, because you know. We'll be hearing what they do when they wake up next day, and then sort of like we eavesdrow in that on their world. And that's probably the logical aim of this whole thing is, mm-hmm. is to show that any insignificant thing that you pick can expand to be the, you know, the core, the essential element in a system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that's the you know, like something so insignificant but it plays a central role. Maybe it's just a knife that someone kills, you know, someone commits murder, commits a crime. It becomes the key element of how you position things, you know. It's
uh-huh.
just the constructive imaginary vehicle. So that's what I'd like to do is to load people with the idea of his, so therefore they do dismantle all these constructs around them and sort of dispel the invested, you know,
mm-hmm.
interest of the bad people on them, or the society for that matter.
So if you could wake up tomorrow and find yourself anywhere in the universe, where would you want that to be?
I wouldn't exchange the plan. I wouldn't exchange my shoes for anything.
Very good. What's your favorite time of day?
It's usually before I go to bed, which is around 5 o'clock, between 5 and 4 o'clock. It's all quiet.
Do you have any rituals?
Do I what?
Do you have any rituals?
I'd like to start one, actually. I was thinking about getting in the habit of writing every day, sort of like making a poem about the same thing in different words, but I haven't done
that. You should. I like that idea.
Yeah.
What other jobs have you had? What else have you done?
I haven't done anything, really.
That's awesome.
That's sort of the confession that I... My life has just been, you know, indulging in what I do. And economically speaking, I'm not at all funded by any other person than myself.
Uh-huh.
So it's very rare that I have the luxury to do anything other than what I do to
mm-hmm.
keep going at it. But it's going to change very soon.
Yes, it should. I expect it to. What was your last meal?
What was my last meal? I just ate a wood-fired pizza.
What was on the pizza?
There was asparagus and then prosciutto.
If you had to... Oh, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
No.
If you had to lose one of your limbs to save your life, would you sacrifice one? And which one?
What, one of the limbs?
Yes.
Probably, is penis considered a limb?
You're the second person who's, it's not a limb, okay?
All right then, that.
Okay.
How's that? That's good, right? That's
could you live without it?
Could I live without me knocker, yeah.
Yeah.
If I had to.
And it wouldn't make you crazy?
If I had, I mean, it's better than losing, what, a leg.
You think?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you could get a prosthetic leg.
No, I can't.
You can't?
Absolutely not. I don't give a shit. I'll have mental sex rather than, you know, I'd like to run around.
Mm-hmm. So if you could create a special hybrid person using the genes of any three people, living or dead... Who would you choose and why?
Three special person. I don't know. Because I think, you know, like the I can name you three important, you know, persons to me.
Okay, well, who are the three important persons?
But I do already possess their qualities.
So it's already been done.
It'd be daft. And if I think of any other three persons to have the genes of, then I'm blank on that one. genes or abilities?
Either. It doesn't matter.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's three important ones to me. It's yeah. Jean-Luc Godard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a French filmmaker. He's the guy who's known as the reinventor of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... And the second one is André Breton, another Frenchman. He was the founder of Surrealism.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me the word element. And thirdly, probably Roger Waters, I suppose. But I wouldn't want to have his genes. I'd probably have, like, Sid Barrett, wouldn't I?
You should. I mean, you may as well, because every interview I've done this week, Sid Barrett's been brought up.
Was brought up. I yeah. actually have genes of him.
Really?
I look a bit like him.
Really? So you could be a bastard Sid Barrett child, right?
Absolutely
Maybe.
Not.
No. All right, well, do you have any final words before I get to the grand finale?
Final words?
Yes.
Yes. I'm just getting ready to take the map off the universe and run with it. And at the moment, we're working on the live presentation of the whole thing, as well as the structuring its release in a world that is yet undefined and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to venture off in my own way, mm-hmm. not doing anything in the old plan. Not interested in that. So we are actually entering a really fun time. And I'm glad that I can document this via you. And when I, you know, it's good to have a record of this.
Yes, it is. All right. Will you, for the final question, I always ask everyone to do this, and I will judge you harshly if you don't do this for me. Will you please give me your best pirate impression?
Best pirate impression?
Yes.
Yeah, I can. Hang on. What is a pirate impression? Aye, aye, aye. Don't get my prostate leg, will you? What kind of parrot are you? Aye. Or bring my old bottle of rum, will you? Aye. I haven't got a clear sense in my mind to say anything further. I. Don't follow.
That was great. Thank you very much.
No, you're welcome. Increase me the world. I'm